My Way, The Way of the White Clouds. Discourse number 5, given at the Osho Commune International, Pune, India.
The dropping always happens in the moment, and always in this moment. There is no progressive, gradual process for it. There cannot be. The happening is momentary. You can't get ready for it. You can't prepare for it. Because whatsoever you do, and I say whatsoever, will strengthen the ego. Any gradual process will be an effort, something done on your part. So you will be strengthened more and more through it. You will become stronger. Everything gradual helps the ego. Only something absolutely non-gradual, something like a jump, not like a process, something discontinuous with the past, not in continuity with it, only then the ego drops. The problem arises because we cannot understand what this ego is. The ego is past, the continuity, all that you have done, all that you have accumulated, all the karmas, all the conditionings, all the desires, all the dreams of the past, that whole past is the ego. And if you think in terms of gradual process, you bring the past in. The dropping is non-gradual, sudden. It is a discontinuity. The past is no more. The future is no more. You are left alone here and now. Then the ego cannot exist. The ego can exist only through the memory. Who you are, from where you come, to whom you belong, the country, the race, the religion, the family, the tradition, and all the hurts, wounds, pleasures, all that has happened in the past. All that has happened is the ego. And you are that to whom all this has happened. This distinction has to be understood. You are that to whom all has happened, and the ego is that which has happened. The ego is around you. You are in the center, egoless. A child is born, absolutely fresh and young. No past, no ego. That's why children are so beautiful. They don't have any past. They are young and fresh. They cannot say I, because from where they will bring the I? The I has to develop gradually. They will get educated, they will get awards, punishments, they will be appreciated, condemned. then the I will gather. A child is beautiful because the ego is not there. An old man becomes ugly not because of old age, but because of too much past, too much of the ego. An old man can also become again beautiful, even more beautiful than a child, if he can drop the ego. Then a second childhood, then a rebirth. And this is what is the meaning of the resurrection of Jesus. It is not a historical fact. It is a parable. Jesus is crucified. And then he resurrects. The man who was crucified is no more. That was the son of the carpenter, Jesus. Now Jesus is dead, crucified. A new entity arises out of that. Out of this death, a new life is born. This is Christ. Not the son of a particular carpenter in Bethlehem. Not a Jew, not even a man. This is Christ, something new, egoless. And the same will happen to you whenever your ego is on the cross, whenever your ego is crucified. There is a resurrection, a rebirth. You are born again. And this childhood is eternal, because this is the rebirth of the spirit, not of the body. No, you will never become old. You will always and always be fresh and young, as fresh as the dewdrop in the morning, as fresh as the first star in the night. You will always remain fresh, young, a child, innocent. Because this is a resurrection of the spirit. This always happens in a moment. Ego is time. More time, more ego. Ego needs time. If you penetrate deeply, you may even be able to conceive that time exists only because of the ego. It is not part of the physical world around you. Time is part of the psychic world within you, the mind world. Time exists just as a space for the ego to evolve and grow. Room is needed. Time gives the room. If it is said to you that this is the last moment of your life, next moment you are going to be shot dead, suddenly time disappears. You feel very uneasy. You are still alive, but suddenly you feel as if you are dying. And you can't think what to do. Even to think becomes difficult. Because even for thinking, time is needed, future is needed. There is no tomorrow, then where to think? How to desire? How to hope? There is no time. The time is finished. The greatest agony that can happen to a man happens when your death is fixed and you cannot avoid it. It is certain. A person who is sentenced, imprisoned, waiting for his death. The death is fixed. He cannot do anything about it. After a certain period, he will be dying. Beyond that time, there is no tomorrow for him. Now he cannot desire, he cannot think, he cannot project, he cannot even dream. The barrier is always there. Then much agony follows. That agony is for the ego, because ego cannot exist. Ego breathes in time. Time is the breath for the ego. So more time, more possibility for the ego. In the East, much has been worked, much has been done to understand the ego. Much has been probed. And one of the findings is that unless time drops from you, ego will not drop. If the tomorrow exists, the ego will exist. If there is no tomorrow, how can you pull on the ego? It will be just like pulling a boat without the river. That will become a burden. A river is needed, then the boat can function. The river of time is needed for the ego. That's why ego always thinks in terms of gradual, in terms of degrees. The ego says, okay, enlightenment is possible, but time is needed. Because you will have to work for it. Prepare. Get ready. And if you listen, and this is a very logical thing, for everything time is needed. If you sow a seed, time is needed for the tree to grow. If a child is to warm, if a child is to be created, time is needed. The womb will need time. The child will have to grow. Everything grows around you. For growth, time is needed. So it seems logical that spiritual growth will also need time. But this is the point to be understood. Spiritual growth is really not a growth like a seed. The seed has to grow to become a tree. Between the seed and the tree, there is a gap. That gap has to be traveled. There is distance. You don't grow like a seed. You are already the growth. It is just a revelation. There is no distance between you as you are and you as you will be. There is no distance. The ideal, the perfect, is already there. So it is not a question really of growth, but just a question of unveiling. It is a discovery. Something is hidden, you pull away the screen, and it is there. It is just like you are sitting with closed eyes, the sun is there on the horizon, but you are in darkness. Suddenly you open the eyes, and it is day, it is light. The spiritual growth is not really a growth. The word is erroneous. Spiritual growth is a revelation. Something that was hidden becomes unhidden. Something that was already there, you realize it, that it is there. Something that you had never missed, simply forgotten. You remember it. That's why mystics go on using the word remembrance. They say the divine is not an achievement, it is simply a remembrance. Something you have forgotten, you remember. Really, no time is needed. But the mind says, the ego says, for everything time is needed. Everything to grow time is needed. And if you become a victim of this logical thought, then you will never achieve it. Then you will go on postponing. You will say tomorrow and tomorrow and tomorrow, and it will never come because tomorrow never comes. If you can understand what I am saying, that the ego can be dropped this very moment, and if it is true, then the question arises, why it is not dropping? Why you cannot drop it? If there is no question of gradual growth, then why you are not dropping it? Because you don't want to drop it. This will shock you, because you go on thinking that you want to drop it. Reconsider it. Think it again. You don't want to drop it. Hence it continues. It is not a question of time. Because you don't want, nothing can be done. And mysterious are the ways of the mind. You think that you want to drop it, and deep down you know you don't want to drop it. You may like to polish it a little more. You may like it to be more refined. But you don't want to drop it really. If you want to drop it, there is no one who is preventing. No barrier exists. Just for wanting, it can be dropped. But if you don't want to drop it, nothing can be done. Even 1,000 Buddhas working on you will fail. Because nothing can be done from the outside. Really, have you thought it? Have you ever meditated about it? That do you want to drop it? Really, do you want to become a non-being, a nothing? Even in your religious projections, you want to be something. You want to achieve something, reach somewhere, be something. Even when you think of being humble, your humility, your humbleness is just a secret hiding place for the ego and nothing else. Look at so-called humble people. They say they are humble. And they will try to prove that they are the most humble in their town, in their city, in their locality. Most humble. And if you argue and if you say no, somebody else is humbler than you, they will feel hurt. Who is feeling hurt? I was just reading about one Christian saint. He says every day to his God, his prayer is that I am the most wicked person on this earth, the greatest sinner. Apparently it looks he is a very humble man, but he is not. He says the greatest sinner on the earth. And if even God is going to dispute, he will argue the deep interest is in being the greatest, not in being the sinner. You can be a sinner if you are allowed to be the greatest sinner. You can enjoy it. Greatest sinner, then you become a peak. Virtue or sin is immaterial. You must be someone whatsoever the reason for it, your ego must be at the top. Judge Bennett has reported to have said that I would like to be in the hell, but first there, then to be in heaven and second. Hell is not a bad place if you are the first and the foremost. Even heaven will look dull if you are just standing in a queue somewhere, nobody. And Bernard Shaw is right. This is how the human mind functions. Nobody wants to drop the ego. Otherwise, there is no problem. You can simply drop it right now. And if you feel that time is needed, then time is needed only for your understanding that you are clinging to it. And the moment you can understand that it is your clinging, the thing will happen. You may take many lives to understand this simple fact. You have already taken many lives and you have not yet understood. This looks very weird, something which is a burden to you, which gives you a hell, continuous hell, but still you cling to it. There must be some deep reason in it, a very deep-rooted cause. I would like to talk about it a little. You may become aware. One, the way human mind is, it will always choose occupation rather than being unoccupied. Even if the occupation is painful, even if it is a suffering, it will choose to be occupied rather than to be unoccupied. Because unoccupied, you start feeling that you are dissolving. Psychologists say that when people get retired from their work and their job and their service and business, they die soon. Almost 10 years of their age is reduced immediately. Before their death, they start dying. Occupation is no more there. They are unoccupied. When one is unoccupied, you start feeling meaningless, futile. You start feeling that you are not needed. Without you, the world can go on easily. When you are occupied, you feel that the world cannot continue without you. You are a very essential part to it, very significant. Without you, everything will stop. If you are unoccupied, suddenly you become aware that without you the world goes on beautifully. Nothing is changing. You have been discarded. You are thrown on the junk pile. You are not needed. The moment you feel you are not needed, the ego becomes uneasy, because it exists only when you are needed. So the ego goes on forcing around this attitude in everybody that you are a must, you are needed. Without you, nothing can happen. Without you, the world will dissolve. Unoccupied, you come to realize that the game continues. You are not an essential part. You can be discarded easily. Nobody will bother about it. Nobody will think about it. Rather, they may even feel relieved. That shatters the ego. So people want occupation, something or other. But they should remain occupied. They must continue the illusion that they are needed. Meditation is an unoccupied state of mind. It is a deep retirement. It is not just a superficial retirement like going to the Himalayas. That may not be a retirement at all, because you can get again occupied in the Himalayas. You can create fantasies there that you are saving the world. Sitting in the Himalayas meditating, you are saving the world from a third war. Or because of you, you are creating such vibrations that the world is reaching towards a utopia, a peaceful state of society. And you can enjoy this occupation there. And nobody is going to argue because you are alone. And nobody is going to dispute the fact that you are in illusion or a hallucinatory state. And you can get really involved into it. The ego will assert again in a subtle new way. Meditation is not a superficial retirement. It is a deep, intimate, real retirement, a withdrawal. A withdrawal from occupation. Not that you will not be occupied. You can continue whatsoever you are doing, but you withdraw yourself and the investment in occupation. Now you start feeling that this constant hankering after being needed is foolish, is stupid. The world can continue quite well without you. And there is no depression in it. It is good, so far so good, that the world can continue without you. This can become a freedom if you understand. If you don't understand, then you feel you are being fettered. So people continue to be occupied, and the ego gives them the greatest occupation possible. 24 hours the ego gives them occupation. They are thinking how to become a member of the parliament. They are thinking how to become a deputy minister and a minister and a prime minister and how to become a president. And the ego goes on and on and on. It gives you a constant occupation. How to achieve more riches, how to create a kingdom. The ego gives you dreams. Continuously inner occupation, and you feel much is going on. Unoccupied, suddenly you become aware of inner emptiness. These dreams fill the inner emptiness. Now, psychologists say that a man can live without food for at least 90 days, but he cannot live without dreaming for 90 days. He will go mad. If dreaming is not allowed, within 3 weeks you will go mad. Without food, 3 weeks will not harm you. They may be even good for your health. 3 weeks without food, a good fast, will rejuvenate your whole system. You will be more alive and young. But 3 weeks of non-dreaming, you will go mad. Dreaming must be fulfilling some deep-rooted need. And this is the need that it gives you occupation. Without real occupation, it gives you occupation. You can sit and dream and do whatsoever you like. And the whole world moves according to you, in your dreams at least. Nobody creates a problem. You can kill anybody. You can murder. You can change as you like. You are the master there. The ego feels most vital while dreaming, because there is nobody who can antagonize you, who can say, no, this is wrong. You are whole in soul. Whatsoever you want, you create. Whatsoever you want, you destroy. You are absolutely powerful. You are omnipotent in your dreams. Dreams stop only when ego drops. So this is the sign, really. In old yoga scriptures, this is the sign of a man who has become enlightened, that he cannot dream. That dreaming stops, because there is no need. It was an ego need. You want to be occupied. That's why you cannot drop the ego. Unless you are ready to be empty, unoccupied, unless you are ready to be nobody, unless you are ready that you can enjoy and celebrate life even if you are not needed, ego cannot be dropped. You have a need to be needed. Somebody must need you. Then you feel good. If more and more people need you, you feel more and more good. That's why leadership is so much enjoyed. Because so many people needing you. A leader can become very humble. There is no need to assert his ego. The ego is already fulfilled so deeply. So many people needing him. So many people dependent on him. He has become the life of so many people. He can be humble. He can afford to be humble. You must remember this fact, that people who are too much assertive of their egos are always people who cannot influence others. Then they become assertive, because that is their only way to say that I am somebody. If they can influence people, if they can persuade, they will never be assertive. They will be very humble, apparently at least. They will not look egoistic, because in a subtle way, so many people depend on them. They have become significant. Their life appears meaningful to them. If your ego is your meaning, if your ego is your significance, how can you drop it? Listening to me, you start thinking to drop it. But just by thinking you cannot drop, you have to come to understand the roots, where it is, where it exists, why it exists. These are the unconscious forces working within you without your knowledge. They have to be made conscious. You have to bring all the roots of your ego out of the soil and earth so you can look and see. If you can remain unoccupied, if you can remain satisfied without being needed, the ego can drop this very moment. But these ifs are big. Meditation will prepare you for these big ifs. The happening will happen in a moment, but the understanding will take time. It is just like you heat water. It becomes hotter and hotter and hotter. And then at a particular degree, at 100 degrees, it starts evaporating. Evaporation happens in a single moment. It is not gradual. It is sudden. From water to vapor, there is a jump. Suddenly the water disappears. But time is involved because the water has to be heated up to a boiling point. Evaporation happens suddenly, but heating takes time. Understanding is just like heating. It takes time. Dropping of the ego happens like evaporation. It happens suddenly. So don't try to drop the ego, rather try to deepen your understanding. Don't try to make water change into vapor. Heat it. The second thing will follow automatically. It will happen. You grow into understanding. Make it more intense, more focused. Bring all your energy to understand the phenomena of your being, your ego, your mind, your unconscious. Become more and more alert. And whatsoever happens, make it a point that you will try to understand it also. Somebody insults you and you feel anger, don't miss this opportunity. Try to understand why. Why this anger? And don't make it a philosophical thing. Don't go to the library to consult why anger. Anger is happening to you. It is an experience. Live experience. Focus your whole attention on it and try to understand why it is happening to you. It is not a philosophical problem. No Freud is to be consulted about. There is no need. It is just foolish to consult somebody else while anger is happening to you. You can touch it. You can taste it. You will be burned by it. Try to understand why it is happening, from where it is coming. Where are the roots? How it happens? How it functions? How it overpowers you? How in anger you become mad? It has happened before. It is happening now. But now add a new element into it, the element of understanding. And then the quality will change. Then by and by you will see that the more you understand anger, less it happens. And when you perfectly understand it, it disappears. Understanding is like heat. When the heat comes to a particular point, 100 degrees, the water disappears. Sex is there. Try to understand it. The more understanding, the less you will be sexual. And a moment will come when understanding will be perfect and sex disappears. And this is my criterion. Whatsoever the phenomena of inner energy, if it disappears through understanding, it is sin. If through understanding it deepens, it is virtue. The more you understand, the wrong will disappear and the right will become more rooted. Sex will disappear and love will deepen. Anger will disappear and compassion will deepen. Greed will disappear. Sharing will deepen. So whatsoever disappears through understanding is wrong. Whatsoever becomes more rooted is the right. And this is how I define the good and the evil, the virtue and the sin, punya and pap. A holy man is a man of understanding, nothing else. And a sinner is a man of no understanding, that's all. Between a holy man and a sinner, the distinction is not of sin and holiness, it is of understanding. And understanding works as a heating process. A moment comes, a right moment, when the heating has come to the boiling point, suddenly the ego drops. You cannot drop it directly. You can prepare the situation in which it happens. That situation will take time. Two schools have always existed. One is school of sudden enlightenment, which says enlightenment happens suddenly. It is non-temporal. Another is school, just contradicting the first, which is of gradual enlightenment. That enlightenment comes gradually, nothing happens suddenly. And both are right, because both have chosen one part of the phenomena. The gradual school has chosen the first part, the understanding part, and they say it has to be through time. Understanding will come through time. And they are right. And they say you need not worry about the sudden. You simply follow the process. And if the water is heated rightly, it will evaporate. You need not bother about evaporation. You simply leave it completely out of your mind. You simply heat the water. Another school, quite the opposite, which says enlightenment is sudden, has taken the end part. It says the first thing is not very essential. The real thing is that explosion happens in a no time gap. The first thing is just the periphery. The second thing is the center. But I tell you, both are right. Enlightenment happens suddenly. It has always happened suddenly. But understanding takes time. Both are right and both can be interpreted wrongly also. You can play tricks with yourself. You can deceive. If you don't want to do anything, it is beautiful to believe in sudden enlightenment. Because then you say there is no need to do anything. If it happens suddenly, it will happen suddenly. What I can do? I can simply wait. that may be a self-deception. Because of this, in Japan particularly, religion simply disappeared. Japan has a long tradition of sudden enlightenment people. Zen says enlightenment is sudden. Because of this, the whole country became irreligious. By and by, people came to believe that sudden enlightenment is the only possibility. Nothing can be done about it. Whenever it is going to happen, it will happen. If it is going to happen, it will happen. If it is not going to happen, it will not happen. And we cannot do anything. So why bother? In the East, Japan is the most materialistic country. In the East, Japan exists as a part of the West. This is strange, because Japan has one of the most beautiful traditions of Dhyan, Chan and Zen. Why it disappeared? It disappeared because of this concept of sudden enlightenment. People started deceiving themselves. In India, another phenomenon has happened. And that's why I go on saying again and again that human mind is so deceptive and cunning. You have to be constantly alert, otherwise you will be deceived. In India, we have another tradition of gradual enlightenment. That's what yoga means. You have to work for it. Work hard. Through many lives, discipline is needed. Work is needed. And unless you work hard, you will not achieve it. So it is a long process, very long process. So long that India says one life is not enough. You will need many lives. Nothing is wrong about it. As far as understanding is concerned, it is true. But then India believed that if it is going to be so long, then there is no hurry. Then why be in such a hurry? Then enjoy the world. There is no hurry and there is enough time. And it is such a long process that you cannot achieve it today. And if you cannot achieve it today, then the interest is lost. Nobody is so keen that he can wait for many lives. He will simply forget it. The gradual concept has destroyed India. The sudden concept has destroyed Japan. To me, both are true, because both are half parts of a whole process. And you have to be constantly alert so that you are not deceiving yourself. It will look contradictory, but this is what I would like to say to you. It can happen this very moment. But this very moment may take many lives to come. It can happen this very moment, but you may have to wait for many lives for this moment to come. So work hard as if it is going to happen this very moment, and wait patiently. Because it is not predictable. And nobody can say that this will happen. This may not happen for many lives. So wait patiently as if the whole process is a long gradual development. And work hard, as hard as possible, as if this can happen this very moment.
Talk to us more about using our sexual energies, because in the West it seems to be one of our main preoccupations.
sex is the energy. So I will not say sexual energy, because there is no other energy. Sex is the only energy you have got. The energy can be transformed. It can become a higher energy. The higher it moves, less and less sexuality remains in it. And there is an end peak where it becomes simply love and compassion. The ultimate flowering, we can call divine energy. But the base, the seed, remains the sex. So sex is the first bottom layer of energy, and God is the top layer. But the same energy moves. First thing to be understood, that I don't divide energies. Once you divide, then a dualism is created. Once you divide, then conflict and struggle is created. Once you divide energies, you are divided. Then you will be far out against sex. I am neither far nor against, because I don't divide. I say sex is the energy, the name of the energy. Call that energy X. Sex is the name of that X energy, the unknown energy. When you are using it only as a biological reproduction force, it becomes divine once it is freed from biological bondage, once it becomes non-physical, then it is love of Jesus or compassion of Buddha. The West is much obsessed today because of Christianity. 2,000 years of Christian suppression of sex energy has made the Western mind too much obsessed with it. First, for 2,000 years, the obsession was how to kill it. You cannot kill. No energy can be killed. Energy can only be transformed. There is no way to destroy energy. Nothing can be destroyed in this world, only can be transformed, changed, moved into a new realm and dimension. Destruction is impossible. You cannot create a new energy, and you cannot create an old, destroy an old. Creation and destruction are both beyond. They cannot be done. Now, scientists agree to this. Not even a single atom can be destroyed. Two thousand years Christianity was trying to destroy sex energy. Religion consisted of becoming absolutely without sex. That created a madness. The more you fight, the more you suppress, the more sexual you become. And then the sex moves deeper into the unconscious. It poisons your whole being. So if you read Christian saints' lives, you will see they are obsessed with sex. They cannot pray, they cannot meditate, whatsoever they do, sex comes in. And they think that devil is playing tricks. Nobody is playing tricks. If you suppress, you are the devil. After 2,000 years of continuous sex repression, West became fed up with it. It was too much. The whole wheel turned. Then instead of repression, indulgement, to indulge in it became the new obsession. From one pole, the mind moved to the other pole. The disease remained the same. Once it was repression, now it is how to indulge more and more in it. Both are sick attitudes. Sex has to be transformed, neither repressed nor madly indulged. And the only way that is possible to transform sex is to be sexual with deep meditative awareness. Just the same as I was saying about anger, move into sex, but with alert, conscious, mindful being. Don't allow it to become an unconscious force. Don't be pulled and pushed by it. Move knowingly, understandingly, lovingly. But make sexual experience a meditative experience. Meditate in it. This is what the East has done through Tantra. And once you are meditative in sexual experience, the quality of it starts changing. The same energy which is moving into sexual experience, it starts moving towards consciousness. You can become so much alert in a sexual peak orgasm as you can never become, because no other experience is so deep. No other experience is so absorbing. No other experience is so total. In a sexual orgasm, you are totally absorbed, root and all. Your whole being vibrating. Your whole being in it. Body, mind, both are in it. And thinking stops completely. Even for a single second, when the orgasm reaches its peak, thinking stops completely. Because you are so total, you cannot think. In a sexual orgasm, you are. Being is there without any thinking. In this moment, if you can become alert, conscious, then sex can become the door towards the divine. And if in this moment you can become alert, that alertness can be carried in other moments also, in other experiences also. It can become a part of you. Then eating, walking, doing some work, you can carry that alertness. Through sex, the alertness has touched your deepest core. It has penetrated you. Now you can carry it. And if you become meditative, you will come to realize a new fact. And that fact is that it is not sex that gives you bliss. It is not sex that gives you the ecstasy. Rather, it is a thoughtless state of the mind and total involvement in the act that gives you a blissful feeling. Once you understand this, then sex will be needed less and less, because that thoughtless state of mind can be created without it. That's what meditation means. And that totalness of being can be created without sex. Once you know that the same phenomena can happen without sex, sex will be needed less and less. A moment will come, sex will not be needed at all. And remember, sex is always dependent on the other. So in sex, a bondage, a slavery remains. Once you can create this total orgasmic phenomena without any dependence on anybody else, when it has become an inner source, you are independent, you are free. That's what is meant when in India we say only a brahmachari, absolutely celibate person, can be free. Because now he is not dependent on anybody else. His ecstasy is his own. Sex disappears through meditation. But this is not destroying the energy. Energy is never destroyed. Only the form of the energy changes. Now it is no more sexual. And when the form is no more sexual, then you become loving. So really, a person who is sexual cannot love. He can only show that he loves. His love is just a means towards sex. So a person who is sexual uses love just as a technique towards sex. It is a means. A sexual person cannot really love. He can only exploit the other. And love is just a way how to approach the other. A person who has become non-sexual and the energy is moving within has become auto-ecstatic. His ecstasy is his own. Such a person will be loving for the first time. His love will be a constant showering, a constant sharing, a constant giving. But to achieve this, you are not required to be anti-sex. To achieve this, you have to accept sex as part of life, of natural life. Move with it, only move with more consciousness. Consciousness is the bridge, the golden bridge from this world to the other, from hell to the heaven, from the ego to the divine. Enough?